Okay. So I'm actually not a doctor. I am an MPH. Jennifer Smith, Dr. Jennifer Smith, is the PI on this project. So I'm presenting on a self-collection device to screen for high-risk HPV infection, particularly among underscreened women in North Carolina. So disclosures, the HPV testing, sample preservation media, and Pap test collection brushes were donated by Hologic GenProbe. The self-collection brushes were donated by Rovers Medical Devices, and my travel expenses have been covered by Hologic GenProbe. So first off, just why test for HPV? As most of you probably know, virtually all cases of invasive cervical cancer are associated with persistent infection with a high-risk strain of HPV, or type of HPV. And HPV testing is more sensitive than cytology or Pap, though it is less specific. And so because of this, new guidelines recommend co-testing, this Pap with HPV testing, for women over 30. So why is self-collection interesting? National screening programs have been very effective in reducing the incidence of cervical cancer in the United States and in other countries, but in the last BRFSS survey in 2012, about a fifth of U.S. women reported not having screened in the preceding 3 years, which is the maximum recommended interval for screening by cytology alone. And this is significant because over half of new cases of cervical cancer in the U.S. occur in women who are unscreened in the preceding 3 years. And underscreening is characterized by disparities. Lower income women, less educated women, and uninsured women are more likely to report underscreening. So self-collection has shown promise in increasing screening among underscreened women in both in pilot studies in the U.S. and in larger studies in Northern Europe, which I'll talk about a little bit more at the end. So this study is a pilot study. We're looking at acceptability of the home-based self-collection among underscreened women in North Carolina. And we're also looking at the validity of home self-collection as compared to a clinic-based self-collection, and then a physician collection tested for HPV and for liquid-based cytology. To look at these questions, we recruited women from the general population, specifically underscreened women, who are women who have not been screened in the preceding 4 years, the way we define that. And we mailed them home self-collection kits, which they returned to us via prepaid mailers. And then we asked them to attend a clinic appointment to collect a second self-collection, as I mentioned, and a clinician collection, which was tested for HPV and via liquid-based cytology. We tested all samples for high-risk HPV infection, and then women who needed additional screening or treatment were referred to receive those. So our target population, as I mentioned, were underscreened, the 30 to 64 years old, below 250% of the poverty line, and uninsured, underinsured, or on Medicaid, and those criteria have to do with the higher risk group that we mentioned. They cannot have had a hysterectomy because you need to have a cervix in order to be screened for cervical cancer, and they cannot be pregnant. So this was a relatively difficult group to reach, as we were recruiting from the general population, and they're medically underserved and low income. So we partnered with a variety of groups to locate these women. The 211 social assistance hotline is run by United Way, and they provide referrals to a variety of social assistance programs. And they provided information about the study to callers, and if the caller was interested in learning more, she was connected directly to our recruitment hotline. We also partnered with a variety of community organizations and agencies that serve low-income populations to speak directly to their clients and provide outreach materials. We did internal recruitment at a clinic that serves a lot of low-income and uninsured women. So new patients coming in who were overdue for cervical cancer screening were told about the study, and if they were interested, they could sign up directly at the clinic and then also complete their clinic component of the study at the same location. And we worked with providers at free clinics and other practices that serve low-income populations to recommend the study to the patients. So the self-collection process is pretty simple and straightforward. There's a very narrow brush that woman inserts into the vagina until it kind of stops at the top of the vagina, rotates it a few times, removes it, and then places the brush tip into a small vial of preservation solution. And I should mention that this is a cervicovaginal sample. It gets near the cervix and touches the cervix, but it does not target the cervix as a clinician screening would. So just a bit more about those methods. This is an image of the brush head. It's a soft plastic tip. The clinician sample was collected as a regular Pap with a cervical spatula and endocervical brush and processed via liquid-based cytology. And then the HPV assay tests for mRNA of 14 high-risk strains of HPV or types of HPV. And those that were found to be positive were also tested for 16 and 1845, which are particularly high-risk types. So our sample, I should say, we still have about 20 people left to recruit, so this is preliminary data. It's majority white and about a quarter African American, and this is pretty representative of the counties that we were recruiting in. And interestingly, it looks like African American women have been completing the study at higher rates than the white participants. We're not sure yet if that's statistically significant, but it's something we're interested in looking into. And we're majority are uninsured. Over half report a household income of at or below $10,000 per year, and 20% report sometimes needing assistance with reading health materials. So that's a pretty high percentage of potential low health literacy. So at least demographically speaking, we do seem to have reached a high-risk population. So 87% of women have returned their self-collection kits successfully, and 75% of women overall have attended the clinic visit, which we're pretty happy with. Again, for this population, it's pretty good rates. And 91% of those who returned the kits attended the clinic. So these are just two broad measures of the acceptability of the test. The majority of women did find the experience to be positive. Most of the rest found it or felt neutrally about it. And then in terms of trust in the safety of the self-test, again, the large majority had complete or moderate trust in the safety of the test. And though the numbers are relatively small for negative thoughts about the self-test and low trust in the self-test, we're very interested in looking at what exactly were the concerns. We do have some open-ended items on the survey, and we'll be looking at that more carefully, and also looking at predictors of these more negative opinions of the self-test. So looking at HPV positivity across the sample types, we can see, wow, you can barely see, oh no, you can see it fine up there. Mostly what we're interested in is the concordance between the home self-collection and the clinician self-collection in the abnormal cytology results, because the abnormals indicate that there may be either a lesion or a neoplasia present or that it will progress. And as you can see, there's actually perfect agreement between the home self-collection and the clinician collection. It's a little off for the clinic-based self-collection, and we're not really sure what's going on there. So again, that's something we need to look into a little more carefully. And then this shows the rates of CIN2, so that's dysplasia that's or neoplasia that needs treatment, essentially, and that's the endpoint of interest for us, by the different cytology results. And it's not quite clear here, but all cases of CIN2 plus were identified as HPV positive by the home self-collection. So in summary, I'm out of time. Self-collection does appear to be acceptable and valid in this population. Women, the majority of women did regard the experience positively. The majority returned their kits. And self-collection did identify HPV infection in all cases of CIN2+. And large numbers of women completed the collection and attended the clinic. And they completed the collection accurately. That was one of the concerns. It can be a concern. Some people have that concern, rather, whether this population will be able to do the sample correctly, and it looks like they did. So some limitations are we don't have sufficient sample size to demonstrate reliable detection of CIN2+. As you saw, we only have 4 cases identified. Women who participated in the study did self-select, so it's very realistic to think that they were more motivated than the average underscreened woman. And then based on our study design, we were unable to determine if self-collection itself helped result in these high screening rates. So we have put in a proposal to conduct a randomized control trial. On our intervention arm, we will send women kits, just as we did in this study, and then contact them with their results, and at that time invite them to participate, to attend a clinic appointment for a follow-up screening. In our control arm, we will only make that phone call to invite women to come into the clinic for a free screening, and that will allow us to look at the different clinic follow-up between those groups, and then also to look at differences between follow-up to clinic between HPV-negative women and HPV-positive women, as determined by self-test. We are currently beginning a study with Latina women that follows the same general design as the study I just presented, but we'll be doing recruitment via promotoras in community centers to have small group discussions in which we present the brush, explain how it works, and then women will have the opportunity to complete that collection in the community center. And we're trying to see if this is a more acceptable approach to completion of the self-collection than our population-based mailing, home-based collection. And then one of the big things that we're looking at is how could this technology be implemented if we do find that it is a successful way of bringing women into screening. The recruitment process for this study was pretty labor-intensive and isn't quite realistic in terms of a large-scale implementation. So we are looking at some studies in Northern Europe have found really good results in increasing screening among underscreened women based on identifying women through national screening registries who have not attended their screening in quite some time, just directly mailing kits to them, and then referring the HPV-positive women only to in-clinic screening. So, and that has been pretty promising. We don't have a national registry in the United States, so we're looking at what could we do, working with large healthcare organizations, potentially, like Medicaid, the VA, HMOs, and even large safety net clinics that serve uninsured populations. Are potential ways to roll that out, so we're also looking at that. And I just want to thank my UNC collaborators and North Carolina Central University and the clinic partners and call centers that have done a lot of work to make this possible. So, thank you.